rolling through the middle of the ice. A shot by Pellick. The rebound alive. Kicked around. They score! Casey Cizikas found the loose puck. And the scoreless tie broken here with 8:45 to go in the third.
Islanders country, hello. This is PT Isles, the Identity Theft Edition, alongside Noel Fogelman. I'm Joe Bono. A reminder, you can listen to this show and all Lighthouse Hockey podcasts on iTunes. Please rate and review, or find us on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or over at lighthousehockey.com. Lighthouse Hockey, your SB Nation home for your New York Islanders coverage. To kick off the show this week, we are joined by Islanders beat reporter for Newsday and host of the Island Ice podcast. That, of course, is Andrew Gross, and he joins us now. Andrew, how you doing?
Hey, Noel, Joe, good to talk to you, and thanks for having me on so I can pick up some pointers on how to really do a podcast here. So,
now, you got the baritone voice out of the three of us, so we're jealous of you. let me start things off with, you know, what do you miss most about being at the arena, besides the traffic going from, I guess, Westchester, if I recall, to Long Island and Brooklyn. How's it been like? I know you did it in the postseason, obviously, and that you guys got used to this, but how has it been just covering the team day in and day out over the course of a regular season from your seat as a beat reporter?
Yeah, you know, and you know, I'm sort of lucky because they are allowing a few media members into the Coliseum. I was at the Garden the other night for Islanders Rangers. And I've been to the Prudential Center once. But, you know, even then, being in the buildings without fans is almost weirder than seeing it on TV without fans. It's just, you definitely notice the emptiness in the buildings. You know, it sort of reminds me, like, you know, you cover an Islander game at the Coliseum, you go down, you do your interviews, and then you're up in the press box around 10 p.m., to start writing, and that's when they get the rec league games out there, and there's no one in the stands except they're drinking buddies, and you can hear everything going on in the ice, and that's exactly what it seems like. Is, you know, you can hear the goalie talking to the defenseman, you can hear Casey Cizikas, like, you know, cursing in happiness after scoring the other night, you know. So it's, you know, it's an experience I never, obviously, none of us thought we would ever go through. Like I said, I feel privileged to be in the building. But, you know, I can't wait for the fans to be back in, because it's just, it doesn't seem like a real NHL game. And then covering on TV, the one thing, you know, the one thing that really I notice in the job is sort of, you know, the breaking of the relationships you had. You know, not that, you know, Barry Trotz was going to call me his best friend, or the players were going to go, you know, hang out and grab a beer with me. But, you know, there was that familiarity where you walk into a room, they ask you how you're doing. And, you know, it's sort of more than a reporter player relationship. And that's completely broken now, just because everything's via Zoom. And you maybe get one or two questions in. But you know what? People have real problems in the world. People are losing their jobs. People are losing their lives. People are losing loved ones. So I've got nothing to complain about, but it is different.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, onto the ice. Where would this team be without Semyon Varlamov?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got three shutouts. And look, seriously, you know, how big is that 1-0 win over the Bruins looking? You know, because that was, they get the 4-1 win the game after against the Devils, but really they don't get that 1-0 win. And remember, that goal was scored late in the third period. They don't get those 2 points. I mean, that really, you know, it seems silly to say right now, on February 9th, whatever we're on, but those 2 points against the Bruins, you know, head-to-head win over Boston, you know, that really could wind up being the difference here, you know, being in the top four or not being in the top four. But yeah, no, Varley's been great. And what I'm enjoying watching him is he's not moving because he's in front of the puck, you know, and his body is absorbing the shots. It's not like, you know, against the Rangers last night, I am struggling to remember a rebound chance the Rangers had. I mean, he just sucked up everything and kept it close to his body. And, you know, he's tracking pucks, or he tracked pucks really well through traffic. And he's just quick. He's really quick. I mean, he flashes the glove and keeps it a 0-0 game on Artemi Panarin. Then he stops Mika Zibanejad. You know, he is going side to side when he has to. But typically, he's not having to do that just because he's anticipating so well.
And you know what? Myself and some other fans, when Lou Lamoriello signed him to a four-year deal, said, did they have to really go 4 years? Sorokin is going to come over. You're going to have a period of time where he's going to want to emerge as the number one, and you're going to be paying a lot of money for your goaltending. But I think, you know, it's still very early. Sorokin's only played 3 games. And the first one was under really difficult circumstances against the Rangers. But, you know, you're seeing the value of having the veteran goaltender, especially with a win now team here, that right now you're very happy that Varlamov is going to be in the fold for a couple of years, and that, you know, Sorokin is able to kind of ease his way into this, maybe more so than some fans with the big expectations thought it would be necessary.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, I remember Semyon a little bit because I covered that first series when he was in net for the Capitals when they played the Rangers in the playoffs. And, you know, I remember the feeling, you know, from the Rangers side was, who is this guy in net? We're going to win this series, you know, and Varley played really well. But then, you know, as much on the East as you want to keep up with what's going on in the Western Conference, it's, you know, the games are late. And it's tough. And he spent 8 seasons in Colorado, and you really didn't get a sense of, you know, what they were spending $5 million a season on. And now I know the Islanders and Mitch Korn and, you know, and Piero Greco were on him, you know, before they signed Robin Lehner. You know, they're doing their due diligence on Semyon Varlamov. He was definitely on their radar, you know, but Robin Lehner worked out so well that one season. But, you know, when Varley's on his game, he's one of those goalies you kind of plug and play and you don't worry about. You know, he's not one of these crazed goalies with a weird personality that you have to, you know, worry about. He's just very matter of fact, you know, and he gets the job done. You know, he's not, you know, would you say he's a top five goalie in the league? You know, he can play like that, but probably consistently, no. But still, you know, you're right. Without Varley in net this season, because, you know, Ilya is still, you know, having some issues adapting his game to North America. He's had some troubles on the angles, but it's also the physicality and what's going on in front of his net that I think is throwing him a little bit, and certainly playing the puck, he has not looked all that good. So yeah, Varley is, you know, Varley's going to play, you know, probably 2/3, if not 75% of this season here.
Yeah. And one forward who's been a notorious slow starter for, you know, for the Islanders has been Jordan Eberle. This year he leads the team with 5 goals. He's playing, you know, away from, you know, Matthew Barzal now. Do you think that's going to be the case going forward? Or is it Josh Bailey experiment on the first line? Is that like short-lived?
No, I think, I mean, they flip-flopped Bailey and Ebbs just because you needed to get Brock Nelson going and you needed to get Josh Bailey going. And for whatever reason, maybe they were too comfortable with each other, you know, but it just wasn't working. And then certainly once Anthony Beauvillier gets hurt, that line sort of kind of blew up in Barry's face. And, you know, in many of these losses and actually in some of the wins, you heard Barry complain a lot about, you know, he needs all 4 lines going. And a lot of games you heard him say, we only had 1 line tonight. And that's not something he said a lot during his first 2 seasons. He got a lot more 4-line balance than he's gotten this season. So, no, I think – and, you know, Ebbs and Nelson go back anyway. You know, they're familiar with each other. And Bailey and Lee are certainly familiar with each other. And, you know, Barzal is – you know, in a way he's easy to play with because you know where the puck's going to be all the time, right? So it's just a matter of you getting to a spot. Whereas, you know, Eberle was describing, you know, that's how he plays with Barzal, but with Nelson, with Brock, likes to play a lot more give and go game. And that really engages Jordan. And you see him going hard to the net. Probably, you know, he's a very streaky player. When he's going well, he's getting to the net. And I think it's been a good sign since really the season opener that that's, you know, he's made a concerted effort to do that.
Andrew Gross of Newsday is our guest. Follow him on Twitter at @AGrossNewsday. You had an article in Newsday earlier today about Barry Trotz gaining confidence in Oliver Wahlstrom. He's also had complimentary things to say about Kiefer Bellows. Now, neither one of them are scoring necessarily. They're not getting consistent chances, but they seem to be, but yet he's going out of his way when talking about them, about the trust factor is there with them. And although maybe it hasn't clicked on the third lines for the consistent offensive, that's really important if you're going to play for Barry Trotz's team and get minutes.
Yeah, and when Barry talks about trust, he's not talking about in the offensive zone. He's talking about in the neutral zone, and he's talking about in the defensive zone, and he's talking about the correct gaps. And Oliver Wahlstrom, you know, he played less than 10 minutes against the Rangers, but I thought you noticed him every time he was on the ice. He definitely was looking to shoot the puck, and he was shooting from all angles. And, you know, he got that one goal in his season's debut this season, but four shots were a career high for him. He had three in a game against Columbus early last season, but four was a career high for him. He came into this game with only two shots total. He had not had more than one shot in the game. So I thought it was a really good sign that he had four shots on net and six attempts total. But really, I really liked the way he was trying to line people up for checks. And, you know, he was trying to get the puck back along the boards. And he just, more often than not, he was doing the right things. And as Barry said, the most praise Barry is going to give a young player like that in terms of defense is he's not a defensive liability. That's high praise from Barry at this stage of your career. And Barry did say that about Wahlstrom after last night's game, that he is not a defensive liability.
And you mentioned the defense. We've seen the same six guys out there, you know, each game. At the break definitely helped, you know, Andy Green a little bit, because I imagine, you know, older legs, you give him a little bit of a break. Well, there be any opportunity for, say, Sebastian Aho or, dare I say, Thomas Hickey to even play a game?
You know, and we asked Barry about that this week, and Barry had just seen the movie Seabiscuit the night before, so he was into horse racing analogies, and he started talking about they were gonna ride this horse as long as it can go. I'm really curious to see Sebastian Aho, because everything I've heard about him and everything I've seen is that this is a guy, and he's not a kid anymore. You know, this is a guy who could be NHL ready right now, but Barry is very much wanting to, you know, stick with this top six as long as it can go. And yeah, you look at Andy Green, and, you know, at 38, you wonder if he might need, a blow here or there, especially when the games start getting back to back a lot. So far, they've only had one, but I think they have eight of those instances this season. Aho is definitely the next guy before Thomas Hickey, I believe. But yeah, you know, the good thing about Thomas Hickey here is that Barry knows exactly what he's getting if he has to use Thomas in a game. You know, it's not with Sebastian Aho, you know, the upside is probably a little bit higher than a Thomas Hickey at this point, but you're not sure how high the elevator is going in that particular game, just because Sebastian doesn't have the experience. You can plan for exactly what you're going to get out of Hicks going into a particular game. And that's very useful. And look, there are going to be injuries here. You know, you're not going, all six defensemen are not all going to play all 56 games. You know, it just, you saw it last season, you know, Boychuk getting hurt, Pelech getting hurt again in the playoffs at the end. You know, knock on wood, you don't want to see it, but you just, I mean, it's hockey, it's the NHL, it's too hard a game. So at some point, yeah, Sebastian Aho and or Thomas Hickey are going to get a crack here. And maybe one of the kids down in Hartford too, you know, whether it's Weatherspoon or I think Bodie Wild's still about a year away or so. But for now, as long as they're healthy, Barry's going to keep these six in there as long as he can go.
And we'll stay on the blue line in the play of Noah Dobson. And, you know, I really was impressed with him, you know, in the Eastern Conference final when he had to step in after the Pelech injury, because it felt like he was fearless out there. He wasn't afraid of entering the zone or jumping into play. And that just showed a confidence at a young age. And, you know, the reason why, obviously, it wasn't a move the Islanders wanted to do, but they said they felt comfortable making the Devon Toews deal because Noah Dobson was ready. And he has lived up to those expectations. We were hearing good things about him in practice and preparation for the bubble and the way he was jiving with Andy Green. And that's really carried over. They must be ecstatic that he looks to be the exactly what was advertised about being a top four defenseman in this league for a long time.
Yeah. And you know what? Dobber's got such a good personality for this. He's a very respectful person, but his confidence comes through, you know, even when you're talking to him as an 18 or a 19 year old, you know, he's very respectful and he appreciates the opportunity and he knows his role and his place on the team, but it's not like he's wondering whether he's going to be able to do the job if given the chance. I mean, there is definitely a quiet confidence that exudes from him, which I think every player really needs. And I thought it was really good to see that out of him, even as an 18 or a 19 year old, through what was a pretty difficult season for him last season, because, you know, he was not used to not playing as much as he did. He only got 34 of the 68 games, I believe, if I'm remembering my stats correctly, and just one of the 22 postseason games. And Noah has talked about how difficult that was going through, you know, because you do want to play. But now, you know, season two, he certainly understands and he sees the wisdom of how he was brought along, how he was able to learn. And, you know, really, you know, when I say learn, it's not learning hockey, although you do really have to get a mental picture of how fast this game really is, particularly making this incredible leap from juniors right into the NHL without stopping in the AHL. But it's also, you know, you're 18, 19, and now you're living the pro lifestyle on chartered flights. And, you know, you have all this spending money for restaurants and stuff, and you're out on the road with men. And sometimes that's good because they can take you under their wing. But sometimes, you know, when you're out on the road with men have other issues, you know, they got family and wives and, you know, other things to think about.
A lot of weddings and babies and a lot of weddings and babies in that dressing room over the last few years.
Which is something that an 18 or a 19 year old, he doesn't have that kind of background in. It can be very lonely for someone like that on the road. Luckily, the Islanders really are a good fraternity in terms of how they all get along. But when I say learn, Dobber really had to learn how to be an NHL player last season, even when he wasn't playing, how to eat the right things, how to discipline himself, you know, how early to show up in the buildings, you know, what working out was all about, how hard to work out, you know, when to kind of step it back a little bit. You know, Johnny Boychuk could still be the Islanders MVP this season, just based on how, you know, Dobber has progressed.
Yeah. I guess from, you know, the youngest player to one of the oldest with Leo Komarov, Uncle Leo, I'll give you another Seinfeld reference, the bodysuit man, because it seems like whatever he does, he's never leaving the lineup. When Anthony Beauvillier, you know, comes back, do you see maybe a chance to put him on the third line with Pageau? I mean, it seems like consistency on that line is key, because it seems like the inconsistent forwards are kind of bringing Pageau down. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been as good as he was in the postseason last year.
Well, Pageau just hasn't had set wings. You know, it's like, you know, spin the wheel and figure out who Gigi is playing with on a particular game. Now I'm hoping, you know, Wahlstrom, you know, and or Bellows eventually winds up as a permanent member on that line, because I think the Islanders kind of need that scoring threat. But yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. I think when Bo comes back, the spot to put him on might be with Pageau. I really want to see JG and Anthony together. You know, and sort of in the same way that I thought, you know, Derek Brassard and Pageau worked so well together. You know, you don't want to be xenophobic about this stuff, but there is a connection there. You know, they're literally speaking the same language, but they're on the same wavelength. You know, they understand and see things the same way. So I think Bo and Pageau would make a very intriguing thing. And then when that happens, it's not necessarily Gigi Pageau's third line. You know, I think lines two and three, you know, the Nelson line two and Pageau's line three become very interchangeable if it's Bo, Pageau, Wahlstrom / Bellows, right? And, you know, if Dal Colle keeps playing the way he has for a couple of games here, he's gonna work his way into the lineup on a very regular basis, because I know he's not, you know, scoring the goals that you want out of a fifth overall pick, or you expect out of a fifth overall pick. But, you know, and fans kill me for this, but if you watch Dal Colle's game, he is contributing. He really is. The way he moves his feet and the tenacity he shows along the walls, that's, you know, and again, I know Islander fans are going to kill me for this, but that's the good things you get from Leo Komarov, right? But if you're getting him from Michael Dal Colle, do you need Leo in the lineup? Not if Bo's back, you know. So I could see a Dal Colle, Nelson, Eberle line kind of being interchangeable with a Bo, Pageau, Wahlstrom trio.
I'm all for the Page-Bo connection, as they'll be known as very quickly if they end up playing together. Last question for us, Andrew. You know, last night, identity line, best fourth line ever. You know, that you see some charts, advanced metrics. I saw one a couple of weeks ago about the kind of pretty much the least productive lines in hockey to that point. And the fourth line was part of that group. But, you know, whenever you want to kind of write them off and say, you know, they're going to be able to still, you know, kind of have the same impact they do on games. We've seen now back-to-back nights, Clutterbuck getting the tying goal against Pittsburgh, and then the two goals there in the third period to elevate them to a win over the Rangers. It really is something special that we're watching, that they are collectively something special, but, you know, individually would not be in almost probably any other circumstance. It's wild that we get to watch this.
Yeah, no, very much greater, you know, than the sum is greater than the individual parts, or, you know, whatever that cliche is, the sum is greater than the end parts. But yeah, you know, Barry said the other day, they think with one brain, and, you know, it was so, you know, you didn't have to be a hockey expert, you know, through games, you know, 8-9. Well, what's going on with the Islanders this year? Well, they're not getting enough from the fourth line. They just weren't, you know, the fourth line was sluggish. It just, they weren't, you know, getting in and establishing a forecheck. They weren't imposing their will. And to me, they were playing in the defensive zone way too much compared to being in the offensive zone. You know, when they're going really well, it really is amazing, even though they're a fourth line, how often they're down low in the offensive zone, you know? And I thought that was really a good sign the last couple of games that that's where they started to play again on a consistent basis. You know, obviously they were on the ice for Jake Guentzel's goal. And then that's why it was such a good sign that they came right back out and, you know, Clutter got one. But it really is, it's crazy as that line goes, you know, for the most part, you know, more than anything, you know, but other than the goaltending, you know, because you got to get the goaltending, you know, so that aside, other than the goaltending, I can't think of anything that drives the Islanders as much as that fourth line does.
Well, Andrew, you've been very generous with your time. As always, we really appreciate it. We hope to see you and other people in an arena watching hockey at some point this year.
Yeah.
And not the cardboard cutout type hello, an actual hello. So keep up the great work at Newsday. Everyone subscribe to the Island Ice podcast, and we'll chat again soon.
Joe and Noel, thank you so much for having me on, and be well and best to you and your families. Thanks so much.
That was Andrew Gross of Newsday. We'll be back with our Isles Buzz segment. You're listening to PT Isles, part of the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. PT Isles, Joe Bono, Noel Fogelman. UBS Arena has their first announced show. Won't be their first performance, but their first announced show, and it is The Weeknd, who of course got mixed reviews from social media for his Super Bowl halftime performance, as everyone does.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be honest, that's the only song I knew, you know, that one. And my daughter refers to it as a TikTok song, of course, because they play that on like videos. But besides the audio being off a little bit, or a lot, I guess, I enjoyed it. I think, you know, for what it was, it was fine. You know, and of course, the big meme of him going through the days, everyone's, you know, tweeted that out as some sort of meme. But for the most part, it was fine. I know everyone's up in arms now that that was the first concert announcement for, you know, the UBS Arena, but it's not going to be the first concert. I mean, does everyone want Billy Joel to be the first announcement and first concert? You know what's going to be Billy Joel. Calm down, everybody. I mean, it's just so funny, the divide between the older Islander fans, you know, and then the younger ones. It really is.
Yeah. You got to now, do they need to get an MSG waiver for Billy Joel to perform at? I'm serious. I'm not, you know, I feel like, you know, that's his residency. And this is, well, I mean, I can't remember. Is Dolan still with Oakview? Was there a kind of Dolan element?
Yeah, there was.
Or kind of went away?
Yeah, I'm not sure now. But there was an element with the Coliseum, though, right? There was something. Because he did play the last, or the first
last. Played the last, the last show. And then he played the first show at the refurbished one. And I went to both of them.
Right.
And Kevin James was there.
Right.
Paul Simon was at the last show. It was a lot of fun, and he's been bringing, you know, special guests. Joan Jett, I believe, was at the first show at the refurbished Coliseum. So it would be a big upset if it was not Billy Joel, but I'm sure they have to just work out some things with the Garden, and you know, Andrew Cuomo can broker that peace agreement if necessary between John Ledecky. Happy birthday, by the way, John Ledecky. Today, February 9th. And the reason why you remember that it's his birthday is that crazy game from four years ago now, when the Islanders got the 5-minute major penalty, scored all those goals, four goals, took the lead, gave up the lead, and then won it in overtime with Brock Nelson. And although that team missed the playoffs, there were some really wild 6-5 games that year that were pretty entertaining.
I mean, it was, Doug Waite, you know, led team, you know, goals were never a problem, you know, but also goals against was always a problem on that team. But, you know, I'd rather have what we have now, obviously, 2.5 goals a game and, you know, the wins. But happy birthday, you know, our co-owner. But, you know, back to the announcement for the concert. I mean, it's crazy that we're actually booking stuff in that arena now. It's, it just shows you how close it is, you know, besides Islander games, which is basically maybe a third of what the calendar dates for the arena, not counting playoffs. So there is going to be a ton of other concerts. I'd imagine they try to get some sort of college basketball in there. It would be great. You know, but it's something to look forward to, and you know, actually being, you know, selling tickets to a concert that, you know, we can go and see, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, the tickets for the weekend are in 2022.
Yeah.
You know, and that's still far off, but I think they're hoping that having obviously hockey, but also live arena events of some kind and with some level of attendance in the fall. And we really don't know what that looks like, you know, here in New York. We certainly have seen big events like the Super Bowl, 20, 25,000 fans. There's been even the World Series had fans in attendance. We haven't tried that yet in New York outside of the Buffalo Bills having fans in attendance for their games, but that was also outside. So, you know, doing something like this indoors, what will you need to have in order to attend? You know, would you need to show proof of a vaccine? I mean, you would think masks would absolutely be required. So it's going to be quite interesting. And I think what everyone hopes is that we get some fans in here. I know Peter Schwartz, my good friend, you know, put out that he had a source that there was some surveying happening around the Coliseum to see what it would take to get fans back into an arena. It would be great to have it at some point this year to have fans in the arena. And then hopefully there's a sense of normalcy when Belmont and UBS Arena opens up in the fall. I mean, that's best case scenario, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And even because who knows if the next season's going to start on time, you know, with the season kind of going into the summer a little bit, I'd imagine they kind of want to delay it a little bit to kind of give the players, you know, a proper off season. But this team does make the playoffs, which currently, you know, they're in the fourth spot. There's still a ton of hockey left, you know, to play. But getting fans in there is big. But filling the Coliseum would be even better. You know, it's definitely a big, you know, a big advantage to have that crowd. You know, the low ceiling. You know, it'd be fantastic. You know, no fans didn't really matter in the bubble last year to the Islanders. You know, going to the conference finals, but just being, you know, I guess officially the last season at the Coliseum, we want to, you know, at least have the fans who have been there and weathered, you know, through so many storms and all this arena drama and Barclays and everything else, the Kansas City talk and mm-hmm. everything, you know, just to have a proper.
If you can, you know, if you can go from Suffolk County to Barclays Center, you know, 40 times yeah. a year, you can maybe take a COVID test or show proof of yeah. vaccination to get into an arena.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's easy.
Problem. Yeah. Absolutely. And hopefully, you know, by maybe May, we're looking at, you know, more vaccines available and eventually by the summer to have herd immunity. But we're still a ways away from that.
My mother-in-law got her appointment for tomorrow, okay. which I should be thrilled about. Right. Get very excited. She's been trying calling the lines at the Westchester County Center. Yeah. And I'm happy that she's getting her vaccine. But we have an appointment at the Connecticut DMV, my wife and I, tomorrow. I got all the paperwork. I have all the proof of residency. I have W-2 forms with my social security number ready to go. We have 9:15, 9:30 appointments. Her vaccination, and she's watching my daughter, is at 12:30. We got to be back. And I don't know. I mean, it's by appointment only. Yeah. So that gives me some level of confidence. But DMV stays mm-hmm. have gone wrong in the past. I just hope I don't cost her vaccine shot because I'm trying to get my license.
Yeah, the DMV, the happiest.
It's going to be.
I would imagine.
I think so. I think I'll be back. It's about a half hour away from where I am. And
yeah.
Okay.
Appointments, I think you should be fine. Yeah.
I got to be out of there by like 11:15, I think, to give her enough time to be comfortably.
Right.
Like if I'm there an hour and a half, that's my hope. We'll see.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Other things around Islanders country. A tweet caught my eye. Earlier today, and a lot of people, Eli Manning, two-time Super Bowl MVP, one of only two quarterbacks to defeat Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, and he did it twice. put out a hockey tweet.
Yeah.
I have some big decisions to make. Thank you to the Rangers, Islanders, and Devils for sending me the jerseys. No need to send shoulder pads. I have that covered. So what was it his children playing hockey? What was the, what led to this? Do you know?
I don't know, but I'm kind of glad he had a Mike Motto jersey there. That was awesome.
You know, Islander one in the middle, which was great, but yeah. Like the fact that all three hockey teams sent him a number 10,
yeah.
I felt like something else must have happened related to hockey that I did not see.
I didn't see anything either. Maybe it's just him pulling his, you know, celebrity rank and getting free stuff from the teams. Who knows? But congrats. I mean, for him to wear a Keith Coyne jersey is fantastic. Or, you know, it's probably Alan Quine, you know, another playoff hero.
The thing was, I was struggling with, I'm like, what would be my pitch to Eli Manning on why he should be an Islanders fan over the other two options? And, you know, the Rangers were the first ones out with the tweet and the Devils followed. And I'm sitting there waiting to see, you know, what the Islanders are going to come up with. And it was very smart what they came up with. They wrote the lowercase E and L-I, you know. Yep. For long, L-I is in your name. It's meant to be make the right pick. Very smart, very cute, like it. But it would be hard for me because, you know, red and, you know, blue and red was his colors with the Giants. Those are the Rangers colors. I'm not sure if I can come up with another.
Well, you know what? I think
selling point.
I came up with it.
Got something?
Yep.
Okay. Ralph Macchio?
No, a little bigger. And I mean by size, Damian Woody. Right. You know, he's an Islander fan now and you already have a center. There you go.
Good protection.
You know, good protection. You know, good snap. I mean, I don't know what the Devils have, you know, David Putty, but besides that, and you know, the Rangers, John McEnroe. I mean, well, there you go. So I think it's
that's a good point. I don't know the Devils celebrity fan. Yeah. I don't know if they have any. I mean, maybe if I go back to when they were at the top of the NHL, like I don't necessarily recall, you know, celebrities going to East Rutherford and the Continental Airlines Arena and Brendan Byrne Arena and watching Devils playoff hockey. I mean, listen, you can have celebrities at the Garden. That's fine. Those are fair weather celebrities in and out for the most part. Listen, there's Boomer Esiason. There's some other big time ones, but then, you know, you always have the celebrities that are there and, you know, they'll pan them during the game and get a big ovation. They may be there, you know, just kind of passing by through New York. I'm talking about the actual like celebrity fans.
Yeah. When I was working at ESPN, I covered the Stanley Cup for a couple of years and I covered the 03 one between the other, the Ducks and Devils. So during a quick break from working, I ran into the arena, wanted to get a pretzel. So I get my pretzel, I turn around and you know who's behind me? Bill Goldberg. And it's just like,
really?
It's like, whoa, you know? And I was like, getting ready, kind of clinching up to take a spear or something like that. But I'm not sure if, you know, he was there for the Devils or the Ducks or just there because the, you know, the wrestling was around at that point. But yeah, so that kind of took me aback. But yeah, you know, we got to find out who a good Devils.
So there's an article here. WWE's Goldberg parties with the Devils in oral history.
Okay.
The story of how Bill Goldberg partied with the 2000 Devils the night they won the Stanley Cup by the guys that were in the room. And there's a picture of Scott Stevens and Bill Goldberg flexing.
Well, there you go.
So he must have got another invite.
Yeah.
His invite back.
Yeah, that was game seven. So I'm sure he was ready to celebrate again. So that's interesting, you know. I mean, coming off another appearance at the Royal Rumble a couple weeks ago.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
of course. I did. He's in great shape and keeps on getting paychecks for, you know, doing the same moves over and over again.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
God bless him. You know, some would say Leo Komarov is doing the same thing, you know.
Yeah, right.
Something else I wanted to bring up. I saw the clip for the first time, the 30-second vignette. You know, kudos to Sean and Christian Arnold and what they're doing with Hockey Night in New York. That's been around a long, long time. And the video element that they're putting together and the MSG, they don't do it just for the Islanders, but those fan vignettes are among the coolest things that any of the fan bases I've rooted for have done. And what makes it so special as Islander fans is that we pretty much know the people. Some of you've met personally, but at least you know them from social media. So then when they're on, it's exciting, you know, whether it be Sean Connor and his drawings, which are, you know, phenomenal, colored pencil drawings, and the ones we've seen with Mike Carver and that podcast and the ILC podcast and so many others. And it's always just cool to kind of see the recognition come by. And there's a lot of other candidates that you could probably think of that'll have their time in seasons to come or later this year.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of it. Like, there's so many. So every season you can just, you know, produce four or five, have those, and you still have the other ones, which are totally evergreen. So it works out perfectly, you know, and you have a nice collection to run, you know, each commercial break. Not to mention, you know, that, like you said, the other teams that MSG covers too, they're all great, whether you're a Ranger, a Hound, or a Devil fan. It's fantastic. Even the Knicks, they have ones, you know, for the Knicks as well. So
even the Knicks,
you know, welcome back.
The Knicks are having a very respectable year this year. This is a respectable year.
Yeah, respectable. It took them, what, 40 games to win like 11 games last year. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal. So
just to get back on the ice for just a little bit in this segment. I was trying to convince myself things weren't as bleak as they were during the 5-game losing streak, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, they were tied with 30 seconds to go against the Capitals and lost that game.
Yeah.
Then they have a 3-0 lead and blow that game. Yeah. And then they get to two games against the Flyers, where you're counting them out in the third period. They rally.
Yeah.
They show the heart like the same way they did in the postseason, and they lose in overtime the same way they did in the postseason.
Right.
So it was a 5-game losing streak. They got 2 points in 5 games. That's really bad and super important in a short season. We've already played nearly 20% of the season with 11 games, but they were really close to getting, you know, 4 or 6 points out of that stretch. They weren't getting blown in, night out. They had one awful period against the Capitals, and then they lost 2 games in overtime and then one defensive lap with 30 seconds left. So it's hard for me to kind of get a feel for how far off they are in playing their game, you know, right now.
I mean, you could also spin it the fact that they have points in the last 4 games. You know, they're, you know, 2-0-2 in those games. So, and they crawl their way out of the cellar, and now they're in the fourth spot in the division. They have, you know, a couple games in hand on a couple teams. Thing is, there's so many cancellations, or just postponements coming up in these games. So I wonder if they can eliminate, or limit, I should say, the amount of these COVID, you know, postponements, they'll be in good shape, because you'll have, I think, the Capitals and Flyers are going to play a ton of games in the back end, the Sabres, the Devils. So if they can get their games, you know, in their scheduled time, they'll be ahead of the curve on most of these teams.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy, the schedule, not only what you're talking about how they have to reshuffle, and you know, Islanders got a couple of games postponed, and you saw how many games that got impacted in terms of changing the dates. But then also the idea that they played the Rangers 3 times already, but then don't play them again until April, right? We're in pretty much early February, and they don't see the Rangers until April when you're playing a team, you know, 8 times a year. So it's, you know, and there's elements of luck that's going to be throughout this season in terms of when do you get a team? You know, when are you playing them? Right. You know, who's in the lineup, who's not in the lineup? That's why, you know, getting the Capitals when the Islanders did, we looked at that and said, what an opportunity, because of the players that were out, did not work out in their favor. You know, we'll see if there are other situations, whether or not you're getting teams that are exhausted because they're playing so many games, combinations of back-to-backs and short turnarounds, or you have people that are banged up. So it's going to be a very interesting, strange type of season. But for the Islanders, given the fact that they lost 5 games in a row, given the fact that they're making still way too many turnovers and are still being somewhat uncharacteristically sloppy in their own end at times, they're in a playoff spot right now. And, you know, we're not that many years removed from being in a playoff spot 20% into the season. would be a thrill.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know before we go, I want to congratulate Barry Trotz for winning his 850th career game. Now he's third all time past Ken Hitchcock. I mean, it's crazy that he's still our coach. I still, you know, pinch myself that we have, you know, legitimate
Hall of Fame coach. Hall of Fame GM. Legendary hockey names running the New York Islanders.
Yeah, you can say what you want about, you know, the offseason that Lou had. He's still running a professional organization here. He made this team a professional organization. He's doing the best he can. Could he do better? Sure. Which GM, you know, could not do better. But another GM hired today, which is in a former Islander.
I saw that.
Yeah, which is interesting. Ron Hextall. So he's back in the fold. Brian Burke, too, you know, president of hockey operations, both hired on the same day, which is kind of interesting because the Islanders did that a few years ago, too, hiring the both their president.
Just so for the younger Islander fans out there, right? So, you know, Ron Hextall was the Islanders goalie in 1993-94 season.
Yep.
And this is coming off their trip to the Eastern Conference Finals. So imagine making the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time. Not the first time in that long at that point, but you're back in the Eastern Conference Finals. You make this run with a good young core team. You think you're on the upswing and you lose both of your goalies in the expansion draft, Mark Fitzpatrick and Glenn Healy. And then Ron Hextall comes over. You know, it was an interesting thing because obviously you knew him from his ability to handle the puck and the excitement around anytime there was an empty net.
Yeah.
But it's hard to shake how badly the Islanders got beat in a 4-game sweep to the Rangers as being just the way I remember, you know, Ron Hextall getting pulled for Jamie McClellan night after night during a 4-game sweep in that first round series.
Yeah. I mean, I saw one of the positives of Ron Hextall that year. Took my wife to her very first Islander game. I think it was President's Day or that President's Weekend or something like that. Seats behind the glass, you know, with Islanders shot twice. Ron Hextall pitched a shutout that game. So it was one of the rare games for him, you know, wore 72 for the Islanders. And Islander fans booed him whether he was wearing an Islander jersey or not. So,
And people can say arguably the best it's tough between him and Garth, but the best former goalie turned GM. In NHL history.
Yeah. And it's funny. Hextall really started the trend of like the Islander goaltender carousel that went on for, you can say, till Varlamov, if you want to say, or maybe Halak. But they had so many guys, and even with that DiPietro, but he got hurt and it brought everyone else in, you know, the Barons and the Rolsons and the Nabokov. Yeah,
Felix Potvin. I mean, they had some names. They had some name goaltenders there.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know if you saw this tweet. It was kind of funny. They had Islander Ranger games with hat tricks. I guess it was on the road, and Mark had one. And I don't know if you saw the comment by one of the guys, was Eric Fischow. And he goes, I remember that because I guess he was the goalie who gave up the So I'm glad that he had.
I was very high on Eric Fischow. I thought Fischow was going to be you know, the guy. Then you thought Luongo was going to be the guy, and then you thought,
yeah,
you know,
DiPietro.
DiPietro was going to be the guy. And listen, DiPietro was the guy. You know, you could have an entire show. And then, unfortunately, I haven't heard too many long form interviews with Rick DiPietro specifically on his Islanders career. Right. I mean, snippets here and there, and obviously he's a radio voice now in New York, but his trajectory was good. I mean, he was the starting goaltender for Team USA. He had made an NHL All-Star team, but combination of injuries and not great teams in front of him you know, really made it difficult. I still think he handled the puck a little bit too much.
Well, yeah.
As good as he was.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, there was a clip that someone posted about what led to his 15-year deal. And, you know, he talked about wanting to be an Islander for life and how important that was for him at that period. Listen, I give a lot of respect to a guy who was drafted number one overall and wanted to be the guy for a franchise where there was not a lot of good things happening around the Islander franchise at that point.
Right.
You know, and they were a team that was able to sneak into the playoffs a couple times, but there was no savior coming ownership wise. They were not going to be able to play with the big boys. They were not going to be a destination for free agents. And for a guy to kind of put his name on paper for 15 years, I know it didn't work out, but it made me proud as an Islander fan at the time.
Yeah, I would love to have been a fly in the wall from when his agent presented that contract to Ricky. Like, are you serious? 15 years? I mean, it's just so funny because you don't think a goalie should get, really any player should get that long a contract. I know Sergei Bobrovsky got a nice contract a couple years ago from the Panthers, but it's crazy. I think the contract just ran out. If you would have been there, I think it would have run out this year. I believe the 15 years.
I think it was 2006. So yeah, I think it would have been this year.
Right. Cause I kept joking that the deal would run out when my son was in high school. Well, he's a junior now. So there you go.
All right. Well, listen, that'll do it for this episode of PT Isles. A special thanks once again to our guest, Andrew Gross of Newsday, for joining us. Coming up for the Isles Thursday, they host the Pittsburgh Penguins and then games against the Boston Bruins and then up in Buffalo on President's Day to take on the Buffalo Sabres. For Noah Fogelman, I am Joe Bono. We will talk to you next week, Islanders Country. Good night.